The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
Welcome to the future you. Frank Lloyd Wright once said, "Study nature, love nature, stay close to nature, and it will never fail you." At Zija, we love nature. We study nature. In India, we discovered Moringa and created Moringa Supermix, a revolutionary new combination of organic ingredients, including natural vitamins, minerals, proteins, antioxidants, and omega oils. Zija's new Moringa Supermix will help you make a change for the better. Simply click on the Zija banner on the UKHealthRadio.com homepage. Power people need power vitality.
Dr. Brian Halverson is one of the UK's leading holistic dentists. He is the author of Great Teeth for Life and lectures widely to the public and to health practitioners. Brian is passionate about providing preventative information to guide us through all the stages of our lifetime. To find out more about Brian, go to www.brianhalverson.com. And now here is Dr. Brian Halverson.
I can see clearly now, the rain is gone.
Hi, Brian here, the integrated dentist for UK Health Radio. This show is dedicated to what I regard as one of those discoveries that the whole of my life I've been looking for people who have got similar views, but Stephen, who I'll be talking to in a sec, not only has similar views, but he's actually bringing it into his everyday life and practice, to the point that he's just releasing a book through Hay House Publishers called The Dental Diet. Stephen, lovely to speak
to
you. Tell me, where did it all start? When did you get the, image of changing the way you were perceiving dentistry? Because I imagine you started off trained as a conventional dentist.
Absolutely, Brian. It's such a pleasure to talk to you and you know, hear someone that's gone on such a similar journey. But it all started for me. I was practicing in Sydney. It was a few years. I have a background in biomedical science, but I trained at the University of Sydney. So I had kind of a basis in nutrition and human physiology, but then so I went into dental school, as you do. We all become great teeth mechanics with our hands, and so I was out in the world learning how to apply these skills in practice. And as every practitioner would know, this is a very demanding. It's a very demanding skill set to acquire, and so and reconstructing someone's smile is very rewarding. But I was in practice and something began to bother me because, as you build your skills as a practitioner, things become easier, take less time. But eventually there were questions in my mind that were bugging me. And I would have patients ask me, I would have parents ask me, why do some kids get crooked teeth? Why does my kid who doesn't brush not have tooth decay? Why is this gum disease not responding to treatment? And these questions, kept coming up every now and again, and, they were bugging me. I didn't find that my education really answered them. So I went back to the textbooks and really tried to find, what are these, some of the answers to some of the things we're seeing every day in practice? And I really found that we don't, the answers weren't there. And so in our conventional dental education, we didn't really have a good understanding of many of the disease processes that are occurring. And so I was looking, you see kids coming to the practice, and dental disease is so prevalent in society now that we just see it as normal. And it began to bother me, the fact that we didn't really understand this. So I actually took some time away from practice to kind of think about it all and, think about whether I wanted to be a dentist for the rest of my life. And I was actually backpacking through Europe. I was in Istanbul, Turkey, and I was looking at a traveler's bookshelf, and And it's where travelers would leave their book and then kind of swap and go on their way. And so I saw one book that said Nutrition and Physical Degeneration by a DDS by the name of Weston A. Price. And so, you know, as a traveler, you don't see many dental books on shelves, or you don't see any dental books full stop. But so I was intrigued by it, and so I picked it up. I'd never heard of Weston A. Price in my 7 years of tertiary education. And so I opened it up, and, it was this amazing story of a dentist who went around the world in the 30s, looked at traditional and modern societies where the modern diet had infiltrated people that had lived on the land in traditional diets for a very long time. He took lots of photographs, and my immediate reaction was, this is a load of baloney. It's a lot of black and white photos. It was from the early 1900s. I immediately thought, this guy is obviously, he's missed something. And because my conventional dental training didn't mention anything that he was talking about. So I actually put the bag in my book, and I forgot about it for probably a few years. But eventually I came back to it, and I opened it up, and I realized that what Price was talking about that I didn't understand, he was talking about the craniofacial structure, he was talking about nutrients in foods that I didn't really have a good grasp on. I realized that there was a huge human story here that I didn't understand, and me as a conventionally trained dentist, in the 21st century, how have we missed this story? And I realized that there was a lot of things to plug in, and so that began me on the journey. I began to look into evolutionary biology and anthropology, because that's what Price did. Began to read a bit wider across the different kind of functional medicine areas, a lot of vitamin D physiology, and I basically found that that what Price is saying is that the dental disease we see today isn't normal. Anthropologically, people do not get dental disease, and that's crooked teeth, wisdom teeth impactions, gum disease, tooth decay, a whole lot. It doesn't happen until we eat the modern diet. And then when you start to plug in the other things he was saying about this fat-soluble vitamin system, vitamin D and vitamin A, all the literature that was coming out in the across all the different medical specialities on what vitamin D does in the body, I began to see that there was a huge gap here that we'd missed. And so that led me down the road to writing The Dental Diet. But it was an awakening moment, if you will. And I was, nutrition and physical degeneration really speaks to you at a deep level, because it's a very human, it's one of the, I think, one of the most important, human studies ever written, simply because it's such an important topic in that our dental structures aren't growing anymore. When we eat the wrong thing, our craniofacial system doesn't grow. So that was such a powerful moment, and the journey from there has been a long one, but that discovery of Price and kind of waking up to that was my step in to this whole area.
Stephen, I could wholeheartedly agree with you. I mean, my discovery possibly was a little bit earlier, but I just had the book left on my surgery shelf by a patient, and I actually didn't look at it for ages, and then I thought, well, I'll read it, and just like yourself, it really, a lot of it didn't seem to make a lot of what I'll call scientific reading, but as I progressed and looked at, took an overview, what I noticed was that, as you rightly say, it was when we started processing food. So this was in the 1930s, but there were parts of the world where processed food was either not really introduced, or it hadn't really affected the health of the population. So it was just at that moment in time when there was this transition. What fascinated me was that it didn't matter if you were looking at mainly carnivorous races such as, say, Eskimos, or Polynesian Indians who may have been just fish and vegetables, or just vegetarian. It seemed to it not be about what type of foods, it was the processing of them, and this is what had a great impact on me.
Yeah, that really, what you'd say about the snapshot that Price took, it was such an important time in human history because, you know, it was just before the Second World War broke out. We still had a lot of societies living on traditional means. And this is what Price looked at. He looked at, you know, the African Maasai, Indigenous Australians, the Gaelic Scottish, Swiss in the Loughnashill Valley, New Zealand Maori to the Canadian Inuit and right through to the Peruvian Indians. So what he found in every single place is that when they live on the means and the foods and the traditional time-honored ways of eating, they didn't get these chronic diseases that he was seeing in his practice in Cleveland, Ohio. And so it's exactly as to what you're talking about there. Is once we start processing food, once we start stripping these core nutrients, so he found this core set of nutrients that every single set of culture treasured. They treasured these foods that had these nutrients, and they made sure that they had, that their children ate, diets rich in them, that pregnant women ate diets rich in them, and, you know, the whole society made sure that the whole thing revolved around getting these foods. And it's such a fascinating period of time that I think we've lost now, because we were basically, after Price, we were swallowed in the modern kind of industrialized food world, weren't we? So Price's work was lost, really. You know, he died in 1948, and his work was more or less, you know, went missing for about 50 to 60 years until it was republished in 1999. Because you wrote your book in the 80s, didn't you? So
as I say, an enlightened patient left it for me. But there was the, I think in California, the Weston Price Foundation or Pottinger Price Foundation. And so I managed to pick up a lot of information from what I think is a charity that gives out, again, very sound messages on good nutrition based on the findings of Weston Price.
Yeah, exactly. And so more, I think in 99 they republished in large scale the book. But what happened from the time that Price published in 1938 to after he died in 48, you know, he basically fell out of the conventional medical world. However, I have talked to dentists that were trained in Price's. They learned about Price in dental school in the 60s and 70s. So it was kind of hanging around in small ways, but for the most part, the message was very much kind of, you know, unfortunately lost in a way. There's a whole story as to how I think Price has been misunderstood. And so when I actually sat and read through the book, and it's actually quite an easy read, it's quite unique,
yeah,
the way he wrote it. It's a very simple, very short text to read, and it's a little bit out. I'd recommend anyone who wants to check it out. It's not a very. It won't take you very long, and you will get something out of it. But the misunderstanding of his work was a big thing. And he actually, there was one nutrient that he talked about, Activator X, he never identified. And so it must have been so frustrating for him. He spent 10 years, you know, talking about, he was presenting, because he founded the American arm of the American Dental Association Research Board. So he was a big player in the dental field in the early 20th century. And so he was there saying that, you know, we are destroying our dental structures. There's these three factors, vitamin A, vitamin D, and an activator X, and he could never identify it. It must have been absolutely torturous for him not to be able, because he was finding this molecule 10 to 20 times, sitting alongside A and D in these foods, but he didn't know what it was. And so I think this was a big part as to why Price's work was lost and misunderstood, because he never identified that. And it's still printed to this day as Activator X in the book.
Absolutely. And I think what was interesting from my edition was that his conclusion was that as you say, the title, Degeneration, that he thought that the rate of degeneration of the human race is that, I'd be very surprised that he thought that humanity would carry on the way it is today, because he not only described the deterioration in the dental structures, but also in their reduced immune system, but also how the nutrition was setting up the was breaking down the social balance in these tribes, so that you were seeing delinquency, disrespect for the elders, which was never in the races before the introduction of the diet. So he really had a very gloomy view. I take a view now that the human race is extremely resilient to an awful lot of toxins and deficiencies. But I'd like to feel that your book would actually start to correct these things from the fact that we use Weston Price as an example of what I would call one of the founding fathers of dentistry, and exactly how I think of it.
I couldn't agree more, Brian. And you know, like the message that Price talked about really was that he said that the dental arch and the dental structure, how it grows, you know, whether we can manage the minerals, calcium and going in and out of the teeth, that really is fundamental to our biological structure. And so what he was basically saying is that when our teeth go wrong, other things go wrong as well. And so, you know, he was looking at all these other diseases and saying, look, all of these other diseases pop up. He didn't really understand the connection, but look, the first thing that happens is that the teeth stop developing as they should. And then all these other issues go ahead, like you say, even right down to the social structures. But Price has been vindicated beyond his grave very much, because he was looking at chronic diseases long before the type 2 diabetes epidemic, long before the obesity epidemic, long before the breathing and Alzheimer's disease, all the other conditions, behavioral conditions in kids we see today, and the autoimmune problems we see. All of these things didn't exist in Price's time. So he was very, very, kind of forward thinking in putting this together, because we've basically played out exactly what he was advising against, and we've suffered the consequences.
I couldn't agree more. And I actually genuinely believe that a true scientist has to be a great observer. And I think that one of the things that impressed me, which I'm so fascinated by now, is that we know that if we want to have a genuine chance of getting a new generation of children out there, that we have to plan preconceptually for their health. And a lot of the races, like you mentioned, Stephen, actually realize this from ancient wisdom, that if you were going to be in a relationship where you're going to produce children, they realized the importance of giving them the best nutrition that was available, so that it gave the offspring the best chance of conception, but also during the pregnancy.
Absolutely. And the amazing thing about that now is we're really starting to plug the science into. Price spoke a lot about, for instance, vitamin D and how they would eat food rich in vitamin D. We now know that a vitamin D deficient mother will pass their deficiency on to their child. And same for during breastfeeding and lactation. So the levels of these fat-soluble vitamins, vitamin D in particular, in breast milk will be directly transferred via breast milk to a child. So those time-honored, ancient wisdom and techniques that cultures had built up over thousands of years, to produce good health in their population, they weren't there by accident. But we now know, and we can now see, why that was so important scientifically. And now Price didn't have the kind of, the luxury of having all that information in front of him. But he, as you say, he was such a great observer that he was able to kind of deduce these things as being vitally important to the human biological system.
And also, as you said, the inverted commas, the establishment were heading in a different direction. I think in dentistry, it was a case of accepting disease and then looking at the best forms of repair mechanisms. And if I think about it, you know, if we're looking at our what I feel one of our strongest arms of active prevention, it's through things like our hygienists and looking after our gums, which really, I'm afraid, when I qualified, was relatively low priority over, frankly, making things like dentures and learning how to do very good fillings.
Yeah, you know, he was very... he did take that stance in terms of, he said that, look, our modern medical approach is very myopic in terms of the whole, you know, preventing disease and what's really going on. And I think, you know, the context of the time really explains that, because you think about, you know, antibiotics and penicillin were really just popping up in the 1930s. And so the medical profession really kind of had this silver bullet mentality where medications and surgeries were knocking out. Because you have to remember as well that during the 1800s, you know, infectious diseases were the biggest killers. You know, we'd moved into industrialized society, so that was the biggest thing on, you know, on the medical kind of mindset. I think that, you know, how do we stop these infectious diseases? And so chronic diseases weren't very common, you know, not nearly as common as they are today.
No.
And so Price was saying, look, we need to think about this stuff, but on the scale of things, you know, the medical profession was seeing, you know, that, you know, how to stop infectious diseases, which today we don't relatively, you know, are much, much lower. But because we've taken that road, we've forgotten how to prevent, and we don't, you know, putting dentures and crowns and bridges and veneers on teeth is great, but it doesn't get to the root cause of the problem, does it?
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, I suppose my... motto in my book was dedicated to those who suffered through lack of knowledge. And so when we're seeing somebody who, unfortunately, and sometimes if you take, for example, the present system in this country, that although we're providing much more education, for example, you were mentioning that your mother came from Wales. In a recent study, 52% of children under six had cavities that were checked on. 52% under six.
Absolutely. That to me is just a lot. And the levels of dental disease today, you know, the fact that we're not having, you know, a much broader societal conversation about this, you know, half of kids in Western societies have cavities. I think in the UK, it was 26,000 kids went under GA to have teeth extracted, rotten teeth extracted. You know, in their childhood dentition. In America, there's 4 million kids that have braces, and so over 75% of the kids have now have malocclusion. 10 million wisdom teeth will be are extracted every year. This is stuff that's happening that we think is normal, but we're in an epidemic of dental disease. Tooth decay is the most chronic, common chronic disease in children. We've not even discussed why dental malocclusion occurs, why kids' jaws don't develop, why don't the 32 human teeth that we are designed for the most of our history walking on the earth have grown perfectly. And in any biological system, by the way, there's no other animal system or any other kind of creature on earth that has a jaw that doesn't grow to fit their teeth. We are the only ones, and as soon as we hit modern civilization, that's when it happens. Wisdom teeth is the same problem. Why are we not having this conversation about the dental structure as a fundamental part of our human health is really quite alarming. We've reached a point now where I don't think we can go any further without doing this, because we're doing things very wrong. We're trying to treat very chronic systemic diseases with Band-Aids from the other end, when really we need to look at the mouth first.
I agree. And as you say, it literally starts from preconception through to the pregnancy, but also then even just the jaw formation from the right sort of feeding of our babies. You know, it all has a fundamental part in growth and development.
Absolutely. And, you know, the great thing, you know, about the, you know, the scientific development we've had since Bryce's time is that we can now, we have an orthodontic model now that can actually prevent braces. If we get into a kid's growth cycle early enough and you get them breathing right, I would argue they need to eat right as well, getting their tongue functioning right, their posture, their lips closed, and their teeth develop naturally. And so this is something that we haven't had a, you know, it hasn't been part of them. You know, we kind of waited until the adult dentition comes through and we would put brackets on or maybe extract premolar teeth. But so we now have the model at hand where we can interact with the craniofacial growth system, but we need to understand that, that nutrition and those early, even prenatally, those habits and how we're getting those nutrients, that's all a part of how this system is developing.
Yes, and I'm sure you know that those other developmental deficiencies will lead to all sorts of degenerative diseases through the whole of that child's life, which is set because if you think about it, you're looking at a time where the cells are dividing so quickly, and if there's not enough nutrients to actually create the right balance formation of those structures, then there's got to be weaknesses which will show as the child grows.
Exactly. And you know, we've got good scientific research now that confirms these links. So, for instance, just the difference between natural and cesarean births, kids will have an increased risk of, for instance, allergies, type 2, obesity, type 2 diabetes. And so, you know, what we're seeing there is that there's actually a microbial system that's speaking to our immune system. And so if we miss out on these crucial microbes during a vaginal, that plays a huge role later down the track. And so this is really speaking to how, you know, the oral and gut microbiome are in constant communication. But in those early weeks to months, you know, the oral environment and the microbes that live in the mouth, that's what seeds the gut microbiome, which eventually seeds the immune system. And we know now that, for instance, a mother's breast milk has a special system to package microbes from her lymphatic system, deliver them to her breast, and deliver them via a breast milk microbiome to a child's mouth and gut. So there's this beautiful system here that we've stripped away and kind of thought as you know, being rudimental and not you know, crucial in terms of development, but we now have a step-by-step way that we can understand this scientifically.
Yes, obviously, I think a lot of listeners may think, well, you know, I couldn't for various reasons, but is it not true that your book actually will look at the compensating for possibly children or adults who possibly didn't get off to the best start? But I'm a firm believer in this new, what I'll call branch of medicine, epigenetics, where in effect we can change our, or we can switch on genes that are possibly good, switch off bad genes because of our environment, especially our nutritional environment.
Absolutely. And Brian, you know, you bring up a really good point there in that understanding all these things, like the importance of breastfeeding and the microbiome, for example, shows us the principles that we need to move forward. And the real message is that every bite and every breath that we're taking is impacting both our oral microbiome, our entire physiological system. So epigenetics, I think, is, you know, such an exciting field where we're seeing that, you know, this idea that we are genetically destined for certain things in our life, you know, really isn't as rock solid as we once thought. And, you know, that's kind of one of the newest and exciting fields in, I think, that we're going to see, and especially in treating chronic disease, is that we have the power to heal these conditions. And so interacting, taking vitamin D, for example. So vitamin D actually turns on 2,000 to 3,000 genes in the body. So that's, if you're deficient, which, you know, nearly every patient that I test is deficient in vitamin D when they have presence of disease, is that that's 2,000 to 3,000 genes that with that VDR receptor that's lacking vitamin D. So that's epigenetic messages that you're sending to your body. And so that's just one example. But, you know, this really speaks to, you know, as to how we have such power, and that's what I hope to, you know, really project to the reader, is that once you understand these principles, you can start fixing these things and preventing the, and making your life, your lifelong health trajectory much more, where we want to back to health instead of this degeneration to the disease.
Do you, you talk about vitamin D, and really, unless for most people, it means taking some form of supplement. Are you in favour of supplements where you feel there's a good scientific or, what should we say, risk-benefit of taking something which is really made up as a concentrate as opposed just purely from our diet?
So what I try to get my patients back onto and what the dental does, a 40-day food program as well after we go through the story of price and the craniofacial structure of and dental development. But so I really try and hammer home that food is our ultimate way. That's what our ancestors did. But today we do have the benefit of certain supplementation and interventions. So certain supplementations are crucial. For instance, chronic low vitamin D, I've found that people do need supplement to get them back to a level of health that can get healing processes to occur. Vitamin D particular, because once we understand, we do learn this in the dental diet too, is that there is a very intricate system in place to deliver these nutrients in the body. So the fat-soluble vitamins basically have to be delivered. We are water-soluble creatures, and so to get around that 60 to 70% water, the body has to carry these things in a fat-soluble packaging system, which is our lipoprotein or blood cholesterol system. And so all of this, from the digestive system, from UV light, and in the UK, obviously, year-round, we don't get a lot of exposure to light. So if you're not getting sun exposure year-round, you're not eating it in your diet, you are vitamin D deficient by definition. I can guarantee you. And I encourage every reader and every practitioner listening to start testing their own, but also their patients' levels. And so I do think that there is a role of supplementation. I think that once we can get practitioners and people aware of these facts, we have much more control in how we both use their diet, their dental consultations, and potential supplementation and interventions to really guide back to health.
Stephen, if you were just suspicious of, as you said, virtually most people are low on vitamin D3, what would you say your dose would be if you were looking at it as a health insurance? Because there's a lot of figures banded around. My personal view is I think you've got to take at least over 4,000 IUs. But some people say even up to 20 or 30,000.
Yeah, so there was actually a study just released a few months ago looking at the data that some of the reference points on vitamin D is just so scattered across when you really look at it. So that's why we have different recommendations from different areas, and there really is no standardized amount. But there was research showing that we were perhaps half to a little bit less than half the levels required to get to the physiological blood levels we need. So I would say, 4,000 to 5,000 would be, and so that study talked about levels more around 10,000. So all of the studies, there is no shown in any of the research at levels of 10,000 per day. One thing I would say with vitamin D is that we do know that it works synergistically with vitamin K2 and vitamin A as well. So I would always take vitamin D alongside vitamin K2 because it does require, and the studies do show that, for instance, in women with osteoporosis, when they take vitamin D supplements and calcium supplements, they actually increase their risk of heart attack. And so we know now, and this is Price's story, this is the Activate X story, vitamin K2 activates the proteins that actually carry calcium into teeth and bones, and it actually picks calcium out of the arteries, and the coronary calcium score is now becoming one of the most kind of used measure in cardiovascular health to measure risk of cardiovascular disease. And so that's simply because our soft tissues are calcifying up because we're not activating the protein, the vitamin K2 activated protein, to pick it up and take it into bones and teeth. And I think, Brian, as well, just on that point, is that one of the best ways that a dental practitioner can pick whether their patient is balancing calcium in their body is the buildup of dental calculus. And you would have seen patients that have this very thick white buildup, not really explained by oral hygiene, and that's a sign that they're not having enough K2s, that their body can't place that calcium into their bony structures.
Stephen, that is absolutely fascinating, because the number of patients ask me why. And as you rightly say, it's often behind the front teeth, lower front teeth, where you've got your salivary gland pouring out. But beyond the fact that I describe it a little bit like a build-up in a hard water area, the causes I've never really, until now, actually even had any inkling that there could be something that is a deficiency or an imbalance which is actually causing it.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because the coronary calcium score really is showing how much your arterial plaques are building, right to the point they even build bony spindles inside the arterial plaque. So basically your arteries are calcifying up. And, this is exactly what Price was talking about. The whole mystery behind Activator X ended up being the vitamin K2 was a whole another vitamin system. And so, we were taught that vitamin K1, is part of the blood coagulation cycle, and that's all it does. And there's very few cases of vitamin K1 deficiency. Vitamin K2 is very similar. So vitamin K1 is a phylloquinone. Vitamin K2 is a menaquinone. And so it's a slightly different related structure, but they do very different things in the body. So vitamin K2 has different forms, but what it does is activate proteins that picks up calcium and carries them into bones. So osteocalcin carries these minerals into bones and teeth. So that's how we create hydroxyapatite. Without osteocalcin, we can't do it. Without vitamin K2, we can't do it. But it also activates matrix GLA protein, which is goes around the soft tissues and mops up calcium from around the body. And so when you see a person with that caked on dental calculus, it is very much likely a lack of vitamin K2. And unfortunately, because as the medical fraternities have unfortunately misunderstood vitamin K2, we haven't had dietary guidelines, we haven't had kind of very good levels at which we're recommending to people to take. So I think the vitamin K2 activated X story is one of Price's legacies that we really need to fix. And as dentists, it's our vitamin. This stuff's working directly with vitamin D to mineralize bones and teeth, and it's so important.
Well, if you imagine the epidemic of osteoporosis, how that is completely misunderstood, again, this is a vital link. Yes, it's not the whole picture, but the fact is that when I'm listening to you, Stephen, I'm thinking, am I really listening to, inverted commas, a dentist, or am I listening to a professor of medicine?
Well, this is where Price's journey led me, because he was talking about such fundamental parts of our body, you have to go out and understand it. But the great thing about it too is, as an oral practitioner, it gives us the context to understand the mouth as the portal to the rest of the body. So I don't think that those two terms should be separate. We really need to be joining these things, and this is really what Price is talking about: is that we have these exact signs in our dental health that are reverberating to the rest of the body. And you think about all the chronic disease cycle levels now: type 2 diabetes, obesity, Alzheimer's disease, sleep apnea, autoimmune conditions. We can nearly relate them all to the gut, which is directly being communicated from the mouth. The pathways there are being drawn out. We just need to kind of bring it all together and kind of take our hats off, I think, as this segmented and siloed health practitioner model, and we really need to bring it into a functional, holistic approach.
Yeah, that's why I call the show The Integrated Dentist, because I believe that we should be part of a healthcare system where we're all sharing information, using each other's information for the benefit of, frankly, of mankind.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, there really is no greater gift you can give to a parent or child or an adult even, to correct their oral health, because dental diseases are a terrible thing to live with. And, people now, in society, feel quite hopeless if they, for instance, they can't afford dental care. We've really approached this wrong. And, if we can recalibrate and kind of understand that all the things that we can prevent and, kind of get back on track, I think that this is going to solve a lot of issues throughout our healthcare system.
Yeah, I totally agree. And my undergraduate training was really about tooth decay and not even just sugar, but sugar frequency. And it was a great sort of thought that, well, it's a frequency that's causing you to have holes in your teeth, my dear. Not the fact that it was the fact that you shouldn't have been having that pure white and deadly to start with.
It's interesting. The sugar conversation is fascinating because, as you say, we've been advocating that patients eat less sugar for decades now, unsuccessfully, mind you.
Yeah.
The sugar consumption since the 80s has just skyrocketed, and we've suffered as a result. But in terms of the systemic effects of sugar, that's really only come out in the last 10 years. And I think in the UK, you guys passed law on a sugar tax. Did that go through the
hill? Absolutely. Believe it or not, the main person who actually was the proponent behind it was a totally unscientific chef called Jamie Oliver. It's amazing that, somebody who, out of his pure natural intelligence, could see there was such a problem.
Exactly. This is the exact problem. But the other thing, too, was that there was two great doctors that I had the pleasure to meet, the cardiologist Asim Mahotra and Dr. Rangan Chatterjee. They're both dealing with heart disease, and Dr. Chatterjee deals with type 2 diabetes, and they know that sugar is causing this. This stuff has only really come out in terms of how sugar metabolically causes these conditions. We've understood this, like I said, in the last 10 years. So the systemic effects of sugar really has only kind of been understood. While dentists, we've been screaming about this for decades now. Yeah. No one's listened to us, did they?
Absolutely. But I think that where I've got a renewed interest in sugar is really about how it affects the microbiome. Carry on, Stephen.
Absolutely. And that was one of the most interesting. So one chapter in the book, we talk about the mouth-gut axis and the oral microbiome. And so we've really kind of seen bacteria in the mouth as being an infectious agent. And so we scrub, we clean, we put mouthwash in there. But what the human microbiome showed us in 2008 was that we live alongside trillions of bugs in the guts, trillions. There's more bacteria in, I think, a centimeter cube of fecal matter in your colon than there is in stars in the Milky Way. The numbers are just mind-boggling. And in the oral environment, we've only identified half of these species. So we only know half of the bugs that are living in the mouth. And so what we've now discovered is that bacteria are performing vital processes in the mouth that contribute to dental health. So they protect against tooth decay. They protect against gum disease. They protect against bad breath. And so they manage the calcium in and out of your saliva. They build biofilm plaque that we've been scrubbing and scraping away at. That it performs a biological, it has a biological role in the body. And so the ecological balance of that plaque will actually balance out the pathological bugs, those strep mutants. And so when we have tooth decay, when we have that that infectious bacteria eating away at the tooth, that's a long-term biological dysbiosis. It's not an infection model. Strep mutants lives in health in the oral microbiome. It's when we don't feed our microbiome the right thing. That's when disease starts to set in. So this is a fascinating area of medicine we're going into, where we understand ourselves as an ecological system, and that, you know, really when you sit down and eat, you're feeding trillions and trillions of bugs in your mouth and gut, and you have to think of it that way because they're helping you as well. So if you help them, they help you. It's this symbiotic relationship.
Absolutely. I think I've done a little bit of talking last year on the subject, and apparently our bodies are made up of something like about 10 trillion cells, but living in and on us, and we're talking about not just bugs, but also viruses, yeasts, and all the rest, what you're looking at is 100 trillion microbes. So you actually almost ask, who lives on who? In the sense that not just a numbers game, but apparently there is actually a proper communication with our nervous system via these microbes.
Absolutely. This stuff is just fascinating. And the numbers there, there's one more number there that just blows my mind, is that your own genetic material is outnumbered 100 to 1 by the genetic material of your microbiome, all these microbes living within you. And so that, to me, if that doesn't speak, you know, volumes in terms of the value of how you understand the microbes in your mouth and digestive system, then I don't know what does. But 100 times the amount of your own genetic material exists in other organisms. And so I think, you know, we're only just beginning to understand this, but if you look at the amount of research coming out, you know, we see that, you know, there's thousands and thousands of papers showing on how these bugs relate to certain diseases. And so when you get down into the gut, you have trillions of bacteria flushing around there. They actually speak to your immune system. 80% of your immune system sits on the other side of your gut intestinal wall, the gut lining. So if you hear about intestinal permeability or leaky gut, that they call it, that's a loss of relationship between your bacteria and the immune system. And so bacteria have the ability to, for instance, pass certain molecules across your digestive system. This has direct physiological effects all over the body, right to neurotransmitters. So they release certain neurotransmitters. There is a direct link between the lymphatic system and the brain. There is such a fascinating connection that we're only just beginning to paint out.
It is absolutely fascinating. And I think also when you're talking about neurotransmitters, I think in a healthy gut, something like 70% of our happy hormone, serotonin, is produced in the gut. So again, a good reason to keep a healthy microbiome.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, and we've really only the gut-brain axis, you know, is such a fascinating one. And, you know, the applications have started to come into medicine, you know, for instance, where, you know, they see a lot of kids, for instance, with behavioral disorders and often have digestive problems. So when you heal the gut, you actually see improvements in their mental performance and how they behave at school as well. So there's this really interesting connection, you know, also with Alzheimer's and dementia in terms of how these processes are occurring over our life and then leading to problems later in with neurodegenerative diseases as well. So I think the links are unlimited that we're going to find to problems all over the body. It's just a matter of seeing it as a whole system.
Well, Stephen, I mean, we could go on talking about this till I think possibly for another 24 hours. But what I think we've done is given the listeners a fantastic amount of information, excuse the pun, to get their teeth into. Now, you've got this book coming out, The Dental Diet. Could you tell us when it's likely to be out and where they could get it from and who the publisher is?
Yep, so it's available on January 9, so it's available now on pre-sale on Amazon UK. You can also find links on my website, Dr. Stephen Lin, drstevenlan.com. But so if they search The Dental Diet on Amazon, they can order that straight away. And it's an exploration of all the things we've talked about, Brian. You know, it's a story about our teeth, you know, about how we've misunderstood our teeth, but it's also, you know, a recalibration of how we eat for oral health and whole body health as well. So there's a 40-day meal program, you know, if practitioners want to give to their patients. Both practitioners and patients can take something out of the book. So I'm really excited to share it.
And Stephen, if people want to actually follow you, where would they go? Because I know that you provide an awful lot of services for literally the professionals, the public, and I think that your contribution in terms of information and education is fantastic. So where can people actually find you online?
Yeah, so they can go to my website, drstevenlin.com, so drstevenlin.com. And so they'll find a lot of nutritional and functional oral health topics on there. But there's also, I run a practitioner training course, which I ran in the UK last year, actually, which is a dental nutrition course where we see how nutrition and all these processes and all the science behind how we start applying nutritional medicine in the dental practice. So there's going to be a big conversation of this moving forward. I think as dentists, we need to be leaders in talking about what we need to eat, because the mouth is fundamental to the nutritional feedback to the body. So I think there's an exciting time for our profession, but also for people out there looking to better themselves and their health.
And of course, we're looking at dental practitioners throughout the world who also can be the first line of observation for and spotting early disease, because people are often going to the dentist regularly and therefore often going when they're well, but not well in the sense that we can pick up on things. And as you know, lots of disease processes can be spotted in the mouth, which actually relate to other parts of the body.
Absolutely. And I think we can really see the signs and symptoms long before they become disease. So I think it's a real opportunity, and we've spoken a little bit about how we've disconnected the mouth and oral health from the rest of the body. We really need to move forward from this and get the conversation between dentists and doctors, but also getting patients understanding how important their oral health is and how it's the signpost for all the other conditions and their whole health in general.
Oh, that's fantastic. Stephen, it's been an absolute privilege to speak with you. And I really sincerely believe I'd love to have you back on my show again, because I think you've got so much to offer our readership. So, thank you from the bottom of my heart, and please continue the great work you're doing.
And thank you so much. It's such a pleasure to meet you, and thank you for all the work you've done over the years, because honestly, in my own journey in this, without people like you and who have been thinking about this for so long, it really wouldn't be far. So it's been such a pleasure to hear your story, and I really look forward to further conversations.
Stephen, I know you're in Australia and you're 12 hours, so I'd say good day.
Good day, Brian.
I can see clear.